From KCUR News, this is Casey Currents, reporting news and culture in Kansas City's diverse communities and beyond. I'm Susan Wilson.
And I'm Sylvia Maria Gross. On this week's show, hear the latest on plans for a downtown streetcar line.
Refugees in the Midwest connect to their past through farming. Plus, hear from the Venus and Serena Williams of the Spelling Bee Circuit.
I think it's really cool because just that cluster of vowels making that really weird sound.
And singer Cassie Taylor talks about following in the footsteps of her blues man father.
The complete juxtaposition to, you know, a grungy, you know, blues rock star is to have this little, like, you know, vintage apron, like, completely, like, manicured woman with dinner on the table by 6 o'clock every night. It's, like, completely different, but it's, like, I guess my alter ego.
Listen up for Casey Currents just after this hour's news.
I'm Sylvia Maria Gross.
And I'm Susan Wilson. Casey Currents is KCUR's weekly magazine show. We use voices, stories, and sound to take you to neighborhoods around the region. On Thursday, the City Council in Kansas City approved funds to study 7 potential extensions to a downtown streetcar service. Of course, that 2-mile downtown starter line doesn't even exist yet. Council members were hoping ground would be broken this summer. To check in on the progress of Kansas City's much-awaited streetcars, Sylvia spoke on Friday with Lynn Horsley, the City Hall reporter for the Kansas City Star.
I think the city feels that it's very important to get started with your streetcars, and they feel like this 2-mile starter route is the way to go. But 2 miles in and of itself will not be a decent mass transit or fixed rail system. They've always said it will have to go more places in the city. And in order to extend the route, they really have to study these different streets and figure out which would be the most cost-effective and also which would offer the most opportunities for economic development.
And the study that the council approved will take a look at the potential economic benefit for 7 different extensions to the starter line. So going to the west side, the east side, the bottoms, the plaza. Do any of them have a particular amount of civic support going in?
Well, my impression is that a lot of people think the route should go, you know, past Union Station on down toward UMKC and the plaza. But I don't think they want to prejudge these other opportunities. And, you know, many people feel like it should serve the east side. There are a lot of workers that could perhaps use the route on the east side. A lot of people want to promote the west side. So I think they need the studies to demonstrate which would be the best opportunity.
And what's holding up the funding for the initial starter line?
Well, there is a lawsuit that was filed. This has been a controversial approach to funding. You know, Kansas City has tried for years to get a citywide vote for fixed rail, and it's just never succeeded. So finally, the city turned to a transportation development district, which taxes a smaller portion of the city, the portion of the city that's deemed to get the most benefit from the route, which is this downtown transportation district. Some of the burden for the funding of this route falls on downtown property owners. And many of those property owners were not able to vote in the election that authorized those taxes. So 2 property owners have filed a lawsuit arguing that that method of taxation is unconstitutional. The city says that it carefully followed the state statute on how to administer and tax through a transportation development district. They say that they got a court approval before they held the election, and that the election results were subsequently upheld by another Jackson County Circuit judge. However, the property owners and the plaintiffs in the lawsuit have now filed an appeal. The city had hoped to get an expedited appeal and go straight to the Missouri Supreme Court for a final ruling. But this week, the Missouri Supreme Court said, no, it will not expedite that decision. And so it's got to kind of wend its way through the appellate court process.
City was hoping to get a final decision quickly so that they can jump on funding.
Right. So they can also start applying for other sources of funding, other sources of federal funding. There's a grant they were hoping to get, a $20 million grant, and the application is due Monday. I believe they will still apply, but before the feds authorize funding, they always want the local communities to have their funding sources in order. And because there's this cloud of litigation, the chances of getting that grant funding are in doubt.
And should say that it's property owners, so it's both residents and businesses that would pay these taxes, but only the residents got a vote, right?
Right, and there were only hundreds of people who voted, while there are thousands of people that are paying the taxes. And many of the commercial property owners who are paying, tens of thousands of dollars or even hundreds of thousands of dollars, do not live in the district and so felt they were deprived of a vote. I wanted to back up very quickly, Sylvia, and just mention that in addition to studying these possible routes for extension south of the river, the city and North Kansas City are also jointly funding a study to take the streetcar north of the river into North Kansas City. So, supporters of the streetcar really want this to fly, and they do want it to be able to go both north and south of the river, and the city is continuing to try to, do that planning, even as the funding for this original route remains kind of under a legal cloud.
And the city already lost out on previous federal grants, is that right?
They were applying for one particular $25 million grant. They did not get that. However, they did get other sources of federal funding that total about $18 million. And that was enough with city funding and with the Transportation Development District funding with all of those combined sources, they feel they can pay for this $100 million starter route.
And
the planning for that is continuing. I should note that. The city has issued an RFP for a construction manager. They have an architecture firm that is doing the final design and is continuing with the final design. And I would note that with some of the federal funding they received, the vehicle orders, they need to order 4 streetcars. That can proceed using federal funds. And the other critical piece to starting construction this summer is utility relocations, and the water department pays for some of that, and they are proceeding with that planning as well.
And there's also a lawsuit filed by Clay Chastain, who's the longtime light rail activist in Kansas City who no longer lives here but is still fighting for his idea that was supposed to go to the ballot in 2011. Where does that stand? Will that get in the way of the plans proceeding?
Well, we don't know, but there was a development on that this week as well. Clay Chastain in 2011 did collect enough signatures to put on the ballot a proposal for a very ambitious and expensive and massive light rail line, which is, of course, very different from the streetcar route. And there was no question that he got enough signatures. However, the city council refused to put it on the ballot because they said it just wasn't workable and that Chastain's proposal for a sales tax increase did not cover the costs of that system. So Clay sued after the council refused to put it on the ballot, and a judge agreed that the city did not have to put it on the ballot. And then an appeals court also agreed that the city did not have to put it on a ballot. Clay Chastain subsequently appealed to the Supreme Court, and this week, the Missouri Supreme Court agreed to hear his argument. We don't know yet when those arguments will be heard or when they will rule, but if the Supreme Court requires that the city put Chastain's measure on a ballot, then that could really complicate the situation as well.
And just as a reporter observing this situation over the years, I wonder if it's just surprising what a role this man has played in the city's transportation planning over the years.
Absolutely. And Clay Chastain is nothing if not persistent. I think people were really surprised that the Supreme Court agreed to review his case, but I think they're also, they feel that it's important to make sure that if the voters really legally are entitled to consider one of Chastain's proposals, that this all needs to be reviewed again. Now, admittedly, the voters have spoken repeatedly on Mr. Chastain's light rail proposals, and only once did they approve it, and that proposal, you know, basically would have taken bus funding, and so that was thrown out. You know, Mr. Chastain doesn't live here anymore. I think a lot of people wish Mr. Chastain would go away and find another cause, but he is continuing to try to get his vision for Kansas City Light Rail to the voters and passed, and the Supreme Court's given him one other chance at that possibility.
And now back on the land that is on the table and supposed to be proceeding on the downtown streetcar, how much will this be delayed by the lawsuit?
Well, as I said, it's still not known. I think the city is, as I said, continuing the planning. The Streetcar Authority has a meeting this Thursday, this coming Thursday, June 6th, in which they're continuing to talk about station design, you know, the streetcar station design, the vehicle design, the marketing, the hours that this would run. So all of the details on how this would be implemented are continuing to be reviewed and planned. And I think the city is proceeding with the expectation that this will all still occur. You know, the bond sale, one of the bond sales was already supposed to have occurred. It was, I believe, to have occurred in March. That clearly has been put off. But they're continuing with the planning and with the initial, you know, efforts to get this underway. As I said, if a bond sale is put off much past the end of this year, that really might delay things.
If the construction did start this summer, when is it supposed to be complete and up and running?
The city was hoping that it would be completed, I believe, by the latter half of 2015, which is when some of the council members who have been working on this for 5 to 8 years would be ending their council terms. So the goal was to, you know, start construction this year and possibly complete the 2 miles within 2 years. That schedule is becoming more and more in doubt.
Lynn Horsley is City Hall reporter for the Kansas City Star. Thank you so much for your time.
Very good to be with you.
Coming up, Olathe's Vanya Shivashankar made it to fifth place in the National Spelling Bee at 11 years old. You're listening to Casey Currents.
At 5:18 and 64 degrees, this is Casey Currents on KCUR 89.3 FM, KCUR.org, the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I'm Michael Byers. Coming up tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, how's your economy doing? Are you staying ahead of inflation? We'll look into that story and meet Stacey Horn, who sings in her church choir, even if she's an agnostic. That's Talk of the Nation tomorrow at 1. Later on Fresh Air, the story of a woman who was raised by a bisexual father in 1970s San Francisco. She's written about it and about the dawning of the gay liberation movement. Fresh Air, tomorrow at 3. 64 degrees right now, a few clouds overnight with a low of 52, sunny and 74 tomorrow.
This is Casey Currents. I'm Susan Wilson.
And I'm Sylvia Maria Gross.
Do you remember your school spelling bee from back in the day? Odds are it was nothing compared to what nearly 300 middle and elementary school students took part in this week in Maryland. For one thing, the words were incredibly obscure. And in a new twist, spellers have to know what they mean, too.
The 86th annual Scripps National Spelling Bee came to a close Thursday evening. And this year, all the kids took computerized vocabulary tests before the traditional bees, and those scores were factored into the standings. All the final rounds were televised live on ESPN, and Olathe's very own Vanya Shivashankar tied for fifth place in the nation. We're going to listen in for a couple of minutes to her spelling her final word, along with the color commentary.
Zenaida.
Can you please repeat the word?
It's from a French name, Zenaida.
Zenaida? Definition, please.
Any bird of a genus of tropical American pigeons that has one species reaching the West Indies and formerly the Florida coast and one occurring in the southwestern United States. Zenaida.
Zenaida? Are there any alternate pronunciations?
Just the one. Zanayada.
Part of speech, please.
Noun.
Zanayada.
Zanayada.
Does it by any chance have the Greek root xenos, meaning stranger?
I don't see that given here.
Does it have the Greek id, meaning family?
I don't see that given here.
That line of questioning might lead her to
Zanayada?
Put the wrong.
Zanayada.
Zanayada.
Letter first. Let's see. This is strictly going to be a guess until she hasn't heard this word before. See how nervous her sister Kavya is.
Yeah, we haven't seen Kavya with that expression yet.
And the guess she gave it a name was awfully close to the name that's
derived
from.
Zanayada. Z-A-N-E-I-D-A. Zanayada.
Zanayada is spelled Z-E-N-A-I-D-A.
Thank you.
Right letters, wrong order. Does she look too troubled by it? Look at this young lady.
She's wonderful.
Two more chances to come back. She proved this year she's a legitimate contender. We don't know who else is going to miss in this round. We've only had one correct. She may finish in the top three. You never know. But what a breath of fresh air here in Washington, D.C.
And a truly wonderful family. They love what they're doing here.
And it's contagious. I think a lot of these other Spellers families are inspired by the Shivashankars.
Although she's only 11, this was Vanya's third time competing at the national level. But she's been attending B since she was 4. In 2009, her older sister Kavya was national champion.
To hear more about their family dynasty in the spelling bee world, I spoke with the Shivashankar sisters over the phone from Maryland the morning after Vanya took 5th place.
Can I give you another chance to spell that final word, Zanayada?
Zanayada?
Zanayada. Okay.
It's spelled Z-E-N-A-I-D-A.
What did you think when you got that word?
Right when I heard it, I knew I wasn't familiar with the word, but I really just wanted to ask all the questions and try to somehow decipher and figure out how to spell the word.
And you asked about the national origin, right?
Yes, I did, because a lot of times, if you don't know a word, that really helps you a lot. But in this case, it wasn't very helpful because it was a French name, and usually French names don't follow very many French rules, which kind of, it didn't help me very much.
How did it feel up there?
I was just enjoying the experience of being a championship finalist because I was so happy that I got that far. That was way better than I did last year, and so I was really happy.
And the other words that you got in the competition, had you studied any of them?
Yes, I had studied all of the words I got. The first word that I got in my semifinal round, Michelangelesque, I had seen it somewhere, but I don't think I actually studied it, but I knew I had seen it before. I'd seen the name Michelangelo, so I could put it together, and I got the word right.
And this year, it's not just a spelling bee. You have to know definitions, too. Did that change the way you studied?
Yes, it did change the way I studied a little bit, because usually we study by using root words and understanding how you can put different words together. And so we did learn the definitions of words, too. But this year, we had to focus a little more, because sometimes words with roots don't always mean exactly what the roots are.
Well, you've probably known about spelling bees pretty much your whole life, right? Because of your sister's involvement?
Yeah, because the first Scripps National Spelling Bee that I went to, I was 4 years old, and it was when my sister was competing. And so, I started my first spelling bee when I was 5, which was the next year. And so it really impacted me a lot because she's the reason that I wanted to do spelling bee, because I thought it was really cool. And just watching her and all the other spellers spelling different words on stage, it really caught my eye.
Where did you do a spelling bee when you were 5?
There's this nonprofit organization. It's called North South Foundation. And it provides children in India scholarships who are very intelligent. And so it's like a nonprofit, and there's many educational contests. So I did like the geography bee, and I did like I did the spelling bee there, and it's really fun to do because you know you're helping someone out and you're having a lot of fun doing those different activities.
Now, what was the first word you ever spelled? Do you remember, or do your parents remember?
I don't know, but I remember in 2006 on ESPN, I spelled the word banana when I was only four. So.
And do you have a favorite word to spell?
Yes, my favorite word right now, because I always have new favorite words, but my favorite word this year is probably Taoiseach. It's a prime minister, and it's from it's Irish, and it's spelled T-A-O-I-S-E-A-C-H, and I think it's really cool because just that cluster of vowels making that really weird sound.
Interesting. You ever get annoyed with people asking you to spell words?
Actually, it's kind of fun because it's really nice that they come to me, and it's just really cool how they think they really like think I'm a great speller.
You're the resident expert.
Yeah, that's what they say.
And were your classmates watching you last night?
Yeah, many of my classmates got together and were watching me. It was at one of my other friends' house, so a couple of girls, and they went to her house, and they all, like, had a watch party, and they were all, like, cheering me on when I came up and spelled my word. They even made, like, shirts saying, Go Vanya, and that just made me feel really great because they supported me so much and been so caring, and it's just so nice of them.
Well, what's it like being the younger sister of a national champion? Is that a lot of pressure?
I don't think it's really a lot of pressure because I think it's really cool that my sister won in 2009. And I really just want to do my best and someday win one day. But, yeah.
And tell me, is there any advice that she's given you?
She always tells me to treasure the experience of being on stage because that's really the most important thing, just to have fun on stage and just do your best and treasure the moment of being on stage and getting a word to spell.
And how is all of this going to contribute to your future career? I hear you aspire to be a cardiac surgeon.
It's not just the words I've learned, but also I've learned many lessons like determination to work to a goal, and discipline, sit down and do what you want to do. And all of these really help me in focus. I know it'll help me in later in life, but also spelling-wise, if I hopefully become a cardiac surgeon, I know it'll help me because I study the root words, as I told you before. So knowing those medical terms will help me later if I do become a cardiac surgeon.
And I have to ask you, what about next year? Will you be competing again?
I definitely will try and do the best I can, and hopefully I'll try and get back to nationals and I really want to do my best next year as well, and just have fun.
Well, Vanya, congratulations for getting so far and representing Kansas well.
Thank you so much.
Do you think you could put Kavya on the line? I want to ask her a couple questions, too.
Yes, definitely. She's right here. Let me give it to her. Thank you so much. Let me give it to her. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hello.
Hi, Kavya. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
What was it like watching Vanya up there?
Oh, it was really exciting. It's a completely different experience to be sitting in the audience and watching her. It's actually more nerve-wracking than being on stage myself because I'm really nervous for her. And nervous about what word she's going to get, how she's doing. And I know she's having a great time on stage, and she's making jokes and having fun, but I just really can't help but be nervous.
Does she have a different style than you do? I know you guys have a lot of similar practices, like you both visualize and write out the words on your hand. But do you think she brings a different style to it?
Well, I think for the most part we have a similar technique in the sense that we write on our palms and visualize the word and ask all the questions to make sure that we have all the information. But I think she just brings a different personality on stage. She's more ebullient, and she's very enthusiastic, and I think everyone around her, like, smiles just looking at her because you can see her passion and her excitement on stage.
And were you surprised by the changes in the rules that required kids to know vocabulary too, the definitions of the words?
I definitely think it was surprising just because it was announced a bit abruptly 6 or 7 weeks before the competition. I think it's taking the spelling bee in a great direction in the sense that kids now have to look more deeply into the word, not just memorize. It forces people just not to memorize, but to understand the definitions of the words and the origins of the words. And I think that's a great thing. I did think it was a bit shocking, and it didn't give the spellers enough time to pull everything together before the competition. But I really hope it's a great change for the years to come, and I'm interested to see where it takes the bee.
And what's it like now that your spelling days are over? Do you have other passions that you're kind of pouring your energy into?
It was definitely weird the year after my win. But I think high school, doing a lot of different activities in high school, I've been really focused in the science area as well. And now I just graduated, so I'll be heading off to college in the fall. So, I mean, I've definitely moved on from it, but it's great to still keep back in touch through Vanya and also coming back to Bee Week every year.
And do you feel like your roots in spelling have had an impact on your life?
Absolutely. Beyond the knowledge and the spelling words that I've learned through my preparation, it's been the composure, the diligence, the hard work that I've put into it that really carries through with me. And I know these are life skills that I'll have to apply in the future, and even public speaking skills for that matter. I probably would be very bad at it had it not been for my B experience. So, and also the friends that I've made through coming to B Week, I still keep in touch with so many of them, and in college I already have people that I know because of the spelling bee.
Huh. And where are you going to college in the fall?
I'm going to Columbia University in New York. I'm looking at being a neurosurgeon, so I'm actually doing neuroscience at Columbia.
That was Kavya Shivashankar, 2009 National Spelling Bee champion. She just graduated from Olathe North High School. Her younger sister, Vanya, placed fifth in this year's Bee.
If you can't listen to all of Casey Kearns today, catch what you missed online in our audio archives, and we've got a podcast. Find us on iTunes. Midwestern cities have a long history of resettling refugees. Cities typically have the resources to help families adjust, including English classes and public transportation. But the fertile land here calls to those refugees who farmed in their home countries. Across the region, several training farms have developed to help these new Americans grow food and businesses. As Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer reports, a new one is just taking root in Des Moines.
Not the whole thing.
Grab a box. Even the barn here is a refugee, an historic structure relocated from a high school.
Chuba,
yeah?
Do you want to go next?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Donna Wilterdink splits apart tomato starts and hands them to Chuba Rajavu, who now lives here, some 8,000 miles from his native Burundi. He'll also transplant peppers and cabbage and tuck seeds into the fertile soil of his new homeland. Wilterdink is the farm assistant with Lutheran Services of Iowa, the nonprofit that has been helping refugees find land to cultivate.
There you go.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's an effort the Iowa Department of Agriculture wanted to encourage. Secretary Bill Northey realized he might be able to help. He attends Valley Church in West Des Moines, which owns 35 acres of land it was in the process of developing.
Two things hit me at the same time, thinking this is a space that's just perfect for them to be able to let refugees be able to farm.
The church is just finishing a new community center, and beyond the ball fields are 24 50-by-50-foot plots with the weathered barn on the opposite side. Till now, the refugees grew food for their families in community gardens. Now they can farm. Wilterdink held a crop planning workshop in the spring.
We discussed what they could sell at market, what things would sell well at market, and what people would be interested in purchasing.
The refugees come from Burundi, Rwanda, Bhutan, Nepal, and Burma, now known as Myanmar. Wilterdink says some have saved seeds from their own countries.
The greens that they have seed from their own countries will do fine in Iowa. especially in the spring and the fall when the cooler temperatures come in.
Each grower has paid $100 toward the costs, but most of the expenses are paid by grants for now. Chantal Gatti-Matare grew various plants back in Africa, including cabbage, peppers, eggplant, and onions that she's planting here. Her daughter, Charlotte, translates for her.
She's hoping to get some money from this whole thing so she can help her family.
Gatti-Matare works the soil with a hoe. Next to her plot is one worked by a woman from Rwanda, who is across from a Nepali family. Mukiza Gahetano plans to grow many of the same things he grew in Burundi.
I will plant some beans and some corn, but a lot of vegetables. Some I will sell and another part I will use in my farm.
As he and his wife work the land, their two young sons and a friend join the singing. All of these growers must participate in a monthly market at the church to learn sales and other skills. Other training farms in Lincoln, Nebraska and Kansas City have similarly leveraged nonprofit resources to get experienced farmers started in this country. Wilterdink will work with the farmers during the season and throughout the year so they continue to learn business skills. Secretary Northey says refugees may never change the face of industrial agriculture in Iowa, but they can certainly contribute to the local economy.
I would think we may see some businesses grow out of this.
He says just being involved in agriculture will help introduce these refugees to other farmers and opportunities. And training farms can work. Community Crops in Lincoln, Nebraska already has celebrated the launch of multiple businesses from alumni. I'm Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
This weekend, the Nelson Atkins Museum opened an exhibit highlighting the work of prolific Mexican artists Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera. They were each famous in their own right, but their tumultuous marriage and ties to communism spilled over into their art. Their work is just a part of the collection of Jacques and Natasha Gelman. They were an Eastern European immigrant couple who became Mexican citizens. It's the first time their collection has made its way to our region. KCUR intern Sangeeta Shastri, Caitlin Brennan, and Beth Lipoff headed to a preview at the gallery to hear what art lovers were thinking as they viewed the exhibit.
My name is Mark Hebner. I'm here because I've been waiting for this show for some time to finally open, and it's a rainy day, and it's a great day to soak it up. I've always been interested in Mexican culture since I was a kid for some reason with just books I picked up. It just seemed like pretty fascinating, back to the bloody days of the conquest, of course, and then I've made several trips to Mexico and traveled the back roads.
My name's Linus Jameson. I like Frida. She is an interesting, complex woman full of pain but full of love, and she paints with absolute honesty about herself. I think that's a good thing to be, is honest.
In Mexico, they love her. There's pictures of her all over the place, and so it's neat to get to see some of her actual artwork. I'm Aubrey Dolliver. I graduated last May, and I'm a nurse, and I've been working actually in Mexico for the past 9 months. I was just talking to my grandma about the importance of the skulls and how that's a really big part of their culture, especially close to Dia de los Muertos, the Day of the Dead, and all of that. And so it is neat to be able to look and bring this to Kansas City and show what a little different culture is like and what is important to them and some of the art that they have.
I'm Barbara O'Leary, and I am an artist. That's what I do. I teach classes also for the Johnson County Park and Rec Department. I tend actually to be a landscape artist instead, so I could probably go home and do a few more self-portraits, something I have not ever allowed myself to do. She certainly did a few. Having a husband who takes care of me and promotes me, it is important. I'm glad our relationship is not that tumultuous. I'm surprised they survived it, but it probably kept their lives interesting, let's put it that way.
Hi, my name is Sarah Gabriel. Every time I come to the Nelson, I always leave wanting to draw things. The colors seem really organic. I don't know, it has a very nice feel to it, all of the pieces.
Mexico, the light's so absolutely wonderful down there for painting and for color clarification, that type of thing. Very vivid. My name is Ed Holland. I lived in Mexico for around 15 years in San Miguel, which is the Art Institute of Mexico. And so that's I've very much been influenced in vivid colors in paintings.
Those were the voices of a handful of the visitors who took in an early viewing of the Mexican art exhibit at the Nelson Atkins Museum. You can see the Gelman collection in the block building through mid-August. And inspired by that exhibit, on Casey Kearns this summer, we're going to profile a few of Kansas City's own creative couples, like Frida and Diego. Do you have a suggestion of a couple we should talk to? Email us at kcurrents@kcur.org or go to our Facebook page and join the conversation. After the break, the daughter of a blues singer talks about shaping her own career. This is Casey Kearns. This is Casey Kearns. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross.
And I'm Susan Wilson.
For the past decade, blues singer and bassist Cassie Taylor has made her home on the road. At age 16, she started touring with her father, blues man Otis Taylor, and she started her own solo career a few years after that. While Taylor has no plans to slow down, the 26-year-old veteran is settling down a bit. She recently got married and moved to the Kansas City area. Some of her true life stories of the blues life and love lost and found are the subjects of her new CD called Out of My Mind. Taylor recently talked to Susan about her life in music. She explained how her career began by eavesdropping on her father's band practice.
I walked in on my dad playing Hey Joe, and I was really interested in the bass line that his bass player was jamming with them. And so I asked to learn it, and they taught it to me really quick, and I kind of played it back to him. And I think that my dad knew at that point that I had the capabilities of picking up the bass, and it wasn't until I was 16 when his bass player actually couldn't go on the tour. And so my dad was kind of like scrambling around and, you know, didn't know quite what to do. And so he just came to me and he was like, okay, I'm going to teach you how to play bass and you're going to come out on the road with me. And I was like, cool, I guess. How much do I make? And he was like, $20. And I was like, sweet, that can like take me out to the movies and buy me sushi. So I went with him, and it was really, it was just such an interesting experience being that age submerged into a really adult world. And I thank God for it, because I was like the biggest loser in high school, and I really couldn't relate to kids my age just because I was a little bit different, and an adult world was exactly what I needed to gain the confidence.
So what did you learn, and what advice did your dad give you about touring and that sort of thing that still sticks with you?
Well, my dad told me that I should write my own songs because that was where all the money is. And so that was something that I really have kept true. And I try to do as many, you know, self-written songs as I can, especially because I was diagnosed with dyslexia when I was in the third grade. And I think that it's a wonderful way that I can be an author but not have to subscribe to the rules of literature, like punctuation and spelling, and you can still get across really amazing images and phrases and emotions, but without all of the context that, you know, writing on paper has. Somewhere off Bourbon, some see sex.
Bones in the garbage, and it smells like broken. Have you faced any special challenges being a female artist? I mean, some would say, you know, the playing field is more level now, but some others say not.
Absolutely is not level. And I recently spoke with a promoter after the show to get paid, and his response was, "I don't do business with women." And
was he serious?
He was absolutely dead serious. And it's one of those things where, you know, you're always aware of it, and then some days it will just smack you right in the head. And I've had, you know, sound guys come up to me and just assume that I have absolutely no idea what's going on and that I don't understand what I want my tone to be, because how could I? I'm a woman. And I think that there's that difficulty to it. And then I think that there's also an underlying sexuality that audience members expect you to participate in. Whereas it's, if you're a woman, especially in the blues world, you are asked to appear a certain way. And that happened. I went to a show and the buyer then later complained to my agent that I didn't dress up enough. I'm a woman. I should want to look good on stage. For me, looking good on stage is just to commit to a style and to be who I am, not to put on a short, tight dress and wear some sparkly heels. You know, I think that that's a secondary sexism in the music industry. It's like we're not expected to operate the same or be as bright in the music industry. And then there's this expectation to where if you're going to be a female musician, you have to look sexy. And to me, sexy isn't the clothes that I wear. It's more of the feeling that I give off. And sexy can be slutty, and it can also be powerful. And for me, I would rather go with the longevity of a powerful sexuality rather than the quick sale of a slutty one.
So how do you deal with some of those things?
I just keep going. Mm-hmm. I think the best thing to do to combat it is just to not give up. Because eventually, if you put time and effort to it, people will realize kind of the message that you want to convey.
Now, at one point, you did get kind of disillusioned and took a break, right?
Absolutely.
Now, what led you to take a break?
It was, you know, the kind of cheap and tawdry images that were coming out of the music industry. And I just didn't want to be a part of it because I wanted to be about the music and the songwriting. And that's just not what it was. And I was told, you know, that I wasn't going to get a record deal unless I lost 20 pounds. And I was just like, why? Why is that something that's important to the music that is going to make somebody feel something? And so I just left, and then it kind of found me again through more of the blues. And I think that the blues is definitely more of a forgiving genre as far as looks. It's less lookist, but it goes back to that whole sex thing where it's like you have to be very particular about the image that you want to deliver to people.
I'm Susan Wilson, and today I'm talking with Cassie Taylor about her new CD project, Out of My Mind. Things about Cassie that people wouldn't know just by looking at her?
I love being at home. And that's something I've always loved. I'm a big proprietor of daily dinners cooked for my husband and for friends. And I love to bake, and I love to decorate and garden, and I have a zest for all things vintage. And so it's interesting. It's like the complete juxtaposition to, you know, a grungy, you know, blues rock star is to have this little, like, you know, vintage apron, like completely like manicured woman with dinner on the table by 6 o'clock every night. It's like completely different, but it's like, I guess, my alter ego.
Where do you think that came from?
I think it came from all the old movies that I watched when I was really young. I loved, like, just, like, White Christmas, I guess, is the first one that my mom played for me when I was little. And just the glamour and the clothing and the A-line dresses and the hair, the makeup and the long red nails and just, like, the sweeping ball gowns that skim the hardwood floors. I just think that that's a time in American history that is just so beautifully put together. And even though that was a really turbulent time in history, just the way that they captured it in the cinema is just so classic.
Now we'll cue up the song, That's My Man. Listen to it, it's clear you're talking about a good man and a bad man. Are they one person or two experiences as you wrote the song?
Three experiences, actually. There's the good man, and then the man that drinks, and then the man that beats. And I wanted to kind of show that the man who was good because there was a reference point. There were things in the past that led you to this current experience, but that you wouldn't be able to appreciate that man had you not had those bad experiences.
Now, what inspired that song?
My life. And I think that, you know, through my life, the partner that I'm with right now is so great because I've had all of these different experiences. I think that, you know, you date to mate to find the one that you want to be with, and all of the ones that came before are the reference point for how wonderful that is. And, you know, I took things from those relationships that I knew I did not want ever to see in a partner, and really lovely things from each person that I said, you know, that is a fantastic and endearing quality, and I want to see that in the partner that I do end up with, so...
So, Cassie, you also have a warning song for women who are thinking about shacking up. The No Ring Blues. Let's listen to a bit of it.
I cook your meals. I wash your clothes. I kiss your neck. I rub your
What gave you the idea for this song?
Oh, God. Oh, I'm going to get in trouble. I wrote this because I wanted to get married. And my boyfriend at the time came in and he said, you know, why don't you write me a song? I was like, you know, I was just feeling a little feisty. And so I was jokingly writing this song, and it ended up to be actually, I think, one of the better songs on the album, just because it's a little bit sarcastic and it's a little cheeky, and it, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, if you are a woman and you want to get married with the partner that you are with, by all means you should make that happen, and if they don't go along with it, then that's not the man that you should spend, you know, 6 years. And at the time that I wrote this, I had a friend who wanted to get married, and she had been with her partner for 6 years, and I think that that kind of was weighing heavy on me, because I knew that they would never get married, she would never get what she wanted, and they ended up ultimately breaking up.
So I'm dying to know, but you don't have to tell me if you don't want to. Did you end up marrying him or moving on?
I ended up marrying him. I made him my manager, and we now live on a little cabin in a lake in Kansas City. So.
And he happens to be sitting here in the studio
with us. I know, and that's
us.
Why I'm so embarrassed. I know I'll hear about it once we get in the car.
Well, it sounds like you made the right choice.
Yeah, he's a fantastic human being. He's absolutely bright red now, too.
Well, Cassie Taylor, I want to thank you for coming in the driving rain to be with us here on KC Currents today.
I'm a little cold and wet, but it's all right.
Thanks for sharing with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Cassie Taylor's new CD is called Out of My Mind. We're going out with a track from that album called No No. Her next show in Kansas City is on July 19th at Fat Fish Blue.
Thanks for tuning in to KC Currents. This show will be archived along with all of our past shows on the KC Currents page at kcur.org.
You can also hear individual stories there or sign up for a podcast. Contact us at kccurrents@kcur.org or on Twitter at kccurrents.
KC Currents associate producer is Alex Smith. Our interns are Monica Sandretsky and Ryan Schisler. Theme music is by Approach. I'm Sylvia Maria Gross.
And I'm Susan Wilson.